I forgot in the middle of it that that I wasn't.
Notebooks and newsbeats, hear that piano rail. Take down the facts, Ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace, trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street. Good morning. Welcome to Left Turn on Bird Street. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it very much. My name is Dan Gowerthy, along with
Tom Nato.
Tom, let me turn your microphone up a little bit. Try that again.
Tom Nato.
Okay, that's much better. Thanks for joining us. We broadcast from KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California, community-owned, non-commercial radio.
The City of Gold in California.
Yes, and actually in the City of Gold today, it's actually not blue skies, kind of gray skies. Unusual for this time of year, actually.
Well, actually, with the heavy rain last night and previous days of low temperatures and more rain.
Right.
I've asked people born here, is this unusual? It's unusual to me, but oh yeah, this is never like this.
Yeah, it
is.
Year. Well, I've been in Northern California for about 13 years now, and I can remember a few times where it rained in May, but not this often and not this heavy either. So
Global warming.
And that's one of the topics we're going to get to in an indirect way in a few minutes. Anyhow, thanks for joining us. And like we said, our program is called Left Turn on Bird Street, and we broadcast every other Monday from KRBS in Oroville, California. And we also invite you to take a look at our blog on the internet. It's not the internet, Tom. It's the internets.
It's the internets. Both of them.
That's right, both of them. We're on the internets at www.ltobs.blogspot.com, or you can Google us simply by typing in LTOBS, and we'll come up at the top of your queue, and we invite you to take a look there, and you can leave comments for several of our stories, and we have a very active comment board, so we invite you to take a look at that. So what do we got first off, Tom? What's on the top of the list this fine morning?
It's Sayonara Tony Blair.
Oh, yeah. When was the election, actually? Was it on last Thursday?
Yeah, they don't have them on Tuesday as we do.
Right.
They do it some oddball day like Thursday.
Right. Yeah, in fact, just as a side note, the one thing I like about the elections in England and parliamentary elections in general is that they'll call them, when I was in England in Easter time, it was about the time they called them, so it's about a six-week window. So you don't have this perpetual campaign that we have going on in the United States. It's like a very narrow window, and surprisingly, the politicians, Tony Blair, Howard, and the rest of them, they'll actually go on TV and they'll speak to real live people.
Well, you know,
not stooges like George W. Bush does.
Well, you know, the disadvantage to short elections like that.
What's that?
Fewer television commercials. There's no money in
yeah,
it.
There's a
communications industry interest in having these to be really building up more and more money for longer periods of time.
You're true. It used to be a cottage industry. Now it's just an industry, I guess.
Right. I don't think that they could shorten it up, because look at the people who would put out of work.
That's true. The consultants alone. It's the Consultants Employment Act, I guess, the elections in the United States. Anyhow, go ahead, Tom.
Well, anyway, from the independent newspaper in England, which is one of the best, Tony Blair's most senior cabinet colleagues plan to urge him to stand down, which means to not run again, within 18 months, because he lost seats for Labour at last week's election. Even normally loyal ministers want him to resign by the time the party holds its conference in September 2006, 2 years earlier than Mr. Blair wishes.
Ooh.
Left-wing MPs, those are members of Parliament, will demand this week that Mr. Blair drops controversial plans for identity cards. Sound familiar?
Very.
and are threatening to mount a leadership challenge against him this autumn. That's pretty quick. And I think that we want to tell you more about the situation in England. Oh, we don't care about it. The fact is that Bush's biggest supporter,
Tony Blair,
also a liar to the people.
Yes.
On the way out.
Yes. You know, when I was in England, I think there was a certain ambivalence towards Blair. The conservatives, the people that I talked to when I was visiting there, didn't necessarily, the common phrase in American elections, Blair was viewed as the lesser of two major evils between the conservatives and the Labor Party. I think the economic support of the people, but the policy, there was great ambivalence towards Blair when I was over there. And it's obvious that, you know, the ambivalence showed in that he won, but he won, it was a very narrow victory.
Well, actually, he ended up with 65 seats,
mm-hmm.
plurality. I mean, it's
right.
More of them, which is handy enough to govern,
right.
But not enough to launch an international war plan. And
right.
He's it's just such a clear sign. And, you know, people will agree with you until you start losing.
Right.
You know, even if you're right and you're losing, they don't care. Politicians want to win and stay in office, so they're ruining their prospects for keeping their jobs. So his party, his cadre, they're saying out.
Yeah. What do you think the implications are as it relates to the United States and Iraq on this, though? Do you think this is a kind of a chink in the armor for Bush? Is it going to hurt?
Well, Bush is not going to run for re-election
anyway,
right? So, but it's a chink in the armor for anybody who plans from the Republican side to replace him.
Or Democratic side, for that matter, too.
None of that, but that means zip allies for any planned invasion of Iran,
right,
which certainly was in the works,
right,
or Syria for that matter,
right.
So essentially the United States is now alone.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably the biggest point here, is that, you know, our forays into the Middle East were going to be we were virtually alone anyhow, but now we're really going to be alone if Blair is ousted here within the next few months. That story said by September.
That's when the campaign to oust him would start. They're officially giving him 18 months, but
I
think it's going to be more like by Christmas.
Right, that's what I thought it was. That's what I had read, the 18-month period. So,
and we've been right in the past.
Yes, we have. So, Tom, make
believe
a prediction.
It or not.
When is Blair going to be out of office, do you think? What's their time frame?
Okay, this 6 months by either let's say March.
March?
Yeah, March.
So yeah. You're giving him about 10 months.
Yeah, 10 months. I'd like to see him up by January, if not yesterday.
Why quicker? Just because of his...
I think it sends a clearer message around the world that this war is a bummer. It's not supported. And you don't like people who lie. There was an interview on Democracy Now! That we played this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Which, one of the wonderful people with those terrific British accents and a party leader was saying that, well, he was found to be lying and to the people, which can be seen as a disadvantage.
A very kind of deadpan delivery.
Yes, it is sort of a disadvantage to be caught out lying and killing people.
Well, you know, the question then becomes for us, or for the United States, our involvement there. We're going to be going it alone. Do you think that will be enough to stop Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney and the whole crew from planning an invasion of Iran?
Nope.
No. So
are living in a different universe.
You're going out on a limb here. You're going to make another prediction that we are going, we being the United States, are going to invade Iran sometime between now and the end of the year.
Their method of operation would indicate from the past,
mm-hmm.
indicate in the future that seeing bad news possibly coming,
mm-hmm.
to hurry up to do worse,
right.
So they'll embroil the country into it so you can't back out.
Okay,
that's what they did here, and we'll do it again.
Well, let's look at a calendar then. If we're looking at a calendar and... say Blair is ousted by, you know, the timing might be real good for him.
The timing on Iran,
mm-hmm.
Is not connected. It was already planned before the results of the election for Blair came in. They're talking June and July into Iran.
Right.
So it'll probably be, we're now May. They're going to hurry up and jury-rig some sort of excuse. International Tonkin Gulf. There's a great story that I read that I didn't bring in today, in which they were looking at the past wars.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish-American War,
right,
based on a lie.
Right.
World War One, based on a lie.
Right.
That is to say, our entry into it.
Right.
They're not saying about World War II in this particular article, but they did mention that there's all that question about whether Roosevelt knew in advance about
right.
the attack. And then there's some talk out there about South Korea actually starting the war with North Korea. And, of course, Vietnam, which we manufactured out of Tonkin Gulf.
Right.
So although there's irrefutable evidence for Spanish War, Spanish-American War, World War One, and Vietnam, with indications but not proof positive for World War II and mm-hmm. Korea, and of course we have Iraq, mm-hmm. we have a history of going to war on lies. And
right.
I find it interesting to note that the things that were used to start these wars,
mm-hmm.
those have been like naval oriented. The bombing of the Maine,
right.
which they found now actually exploded from its own...
missiles?
Well, its own boiler.
Oh, is it the boiler?
Okay. There. And then, of course, the Lusitania was the...
Right, World War
One. Which turns out now the divers have gotten down to be actually loaded with the weapons that the Germans said it was trafficking with.
Right.
And then, of course, Vietnam, which was the Tonkin Gulf thing.
Right.
Which was, of course...
That was really jury-rigged.
Yeah.
That one was rigged really, really, really. And that's unfortunate because that's... You're right. In all three of these examples, it led us into deadly wars. Now, so what... Just... Speculation. We're going to place a bet on the internet.
Speculate. That's my stock.
Analyze. Do you? What do you think we're going to? We being the United States, or not we? Because I'm not. Makes it sound like I'm part of it. Them, the Bush administration.
Well, you know, when the ship sinks, all hands go. Whether
that's true
or not.
That's true. So when the Bush administration comes up with their excuse, what do you think the excuse is going to be? Some sort of they call it a naval brigade with some nuclear warheads or some rigged up charge like that? Or
well, they've been trying to set it up over this suspicions that Iran is building a nuclear reactor, from which they're going to get the materials to also create a bomb.
Right.
That's what they've been working on for a long time. But I think we wore that one out with
Iraq.
With Saddam.
Right.
But I think this time is that we led the way for Israel in the last one. This time, I think Israel is going to stage a aerial attack that, of course, as allies, we'll have to support. We'll let them drag us into it.
Yeah, that's good. That makes a lot of sense, actually, Tom.
Of course, they're going to have to explain afterwards how, with billions of dollars over there, we allowed a Israeli air force to go right over Iran,
right.
unless I guess they go around by way of Antarctica,
right.
to hit
right.
Iran. But in truth, who cares? That's reality-based information, and we know, because they've self-avowed it, that they don't participate in that.
You know, on the subject of Iraq, and this wasn't on our agenda, and I want to just take a quick little detour, or a left turn, if you will, since you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. You know, since the installation of the Iraqi cabinet, I think it was April 28th, do you know how many bombings and killings there have been in Iraq?
The ones that they reported or actually?
The ones that are reported.
Thousands.
Well, they have reported 300 deaths, and it's like there's an explosion every day.
Oh, you mean talking about in recent times?
Yes,
oh,
in the last,
no,
since April 28th, 300. So, just as a side note, you know what I found very interesting? We were talking about this.
These are a few hangers on, won't say dive off the beat.
Right. Now, what I found very interesting as I was looking on the internets last night about stories and information and just updating myself is, and I've been following the bombings that have been daily occurrences over there. I mean, and these are not...
Training up, eh?
Yeah. I mean, these are not explosions that are killing one or two people. These are explosions that are killing 40, 50 people. I mean,
primarily innocent people who had nothing to do with anything.
Right. They're just innocent bystanders. And so it hasn't really been getting that much media play. I mean, it'll be buried. So I go on the internets last night, and, you know, of course, there were 7 Americans killed yesterday or Sunday in Iraq, and that was the top story. And it always amazes me how we've gone to Iraq, and were basically responsible for the deaths of a lot of innocent people. Most of the victims there have been innocent people, in fact, in just 300 since April 28th by suicide explosions. And, you know, it's in the media, and people are, you know, it's getting reported, but it isn't really being really reported. You know, the awareness isn't up there. All of a sudden, seven American troops, which is unfortunate, of course, you know, and they should be reported. But, man, those seven deaths of those seven American troops way over Trump the deaths of 300 innocent Iraqis.
You're a newsman. You've heard the expression local angle.
Yeah, of course.
It's got the local angle to begin with, and yeah, but it also displays an incredible lack of concern about others.
Right. You know, and that's a part that amazes me, is that who's really the blame in this? Is it the media? Is it ourselves, because we don't the American people really don't care about this? And I think it's the latter, because I think American people are so disconnected from it. You know, I was listening to a conversation the other day about last week was the 30th, I guess it was the 35th anniversary of Kent State, the killing of four students there who were involved in anti-war demonstrations by the Ohio National Guard. Four students were killed in the protests and whatnot. And it occurred to me, you know, one big difference between then and now, why students aren't as active, and this is maybe the disconnect in American society, is two words: the draft. There's no draft. So people, you know, people here in the United States, they're going around and, you know, their kids don't have to go to service. They don't necessarily know people that are going to service. So if it's not happening to them, it doesn't really matter. You know, 300 people killed in the last couple of weeks because of our occupation of Iraq. Oh, well, that's too bad. It's a price we're going to have to pay. But, you know, I think that's where the big disconnect is.
I think that's a big factor, but there are some others that are more subtle, I think.
Like what?
Like one is that, you know, college has gotten more expensive.
Right.
And scholarships have been basically done away with.
Mm-hmm.
So you have more rich people going to college.
Right.
Than poor.
Right.
And it's the poor that are used to a system being screwed by it.
Right, that's true.
And more politically sensitive. Everything is fine for the rich people.
Right.
So they don't have to worry about things like
right.
that. So they're not interested, because they plan to spend their vacation in Switzerland and their lifetime on the Riviera.
Right. Yeah, well, that's true. In the all-draft army, or the all-volunteer army, I'm sorry, you're right. And I can speak from experience on this. It's very expensive, you know, for even middle-class family to send a kid to college. Very expensive, let me tell you. I can't believe how much has gone up since I was in school 30 years ago. And so for people that are even below middle-class, they have a built-in kind of pool of applicants. And I know we've talked about this on the show before, but I can't tell you how, in the last couple of years, I've had to go to school to pick up one of my sons for dentist appointments and whatnot. Go into the attendance office, and you know, you look out there in the quad, and who are there? There's four or five Marines, you know, in their dress uniforms out there trolling for recruits, you know.
Cannon fodder.
You know, this brings up one other thing. I know we're getting way off topic on this. I don't know if you happen to read this, but there was, and this really shouldn't come as any surprise, because the Army is they're actually now having trouble recruiting people. They actually, you know.
Even the Navy, where you would never see any kind right. of action, their recruiting is in trouble.
But, well, another side note, you know, of the seven killed yesterday, one was a sailor, actually. You know, in battle, probably a SEAL.
Like Navy SEAL, yeah.
Yeah, probably a SEAL, because he was with Marines.
Or did this happen at a house of prostitution? They'll go a long way to get there, you know. If you want to get soldiers, blow up a house of prostitution.
Yeah. Anyhow, there was a story, it was out in the last week or so. Coincidentally, there have been reports that the Army and the Air Force, or not the Air Force, but the Army, Marines, and Navy are not meeting, and much less the National Guards, are not meeting the recruitment goals. And I believe it was in Ohio. They've actually recruited one kid who was diagnosed as bipolar. They've helped some kids in Colorado. They had criminal backgrounds. I mean, this is how desperate they're getting now to get it. Because now even the poor people are saying, hey, you know, they're kind of, they're tuning into this now saying, hey, you know, I'm not going to go over there and fight Bush's war now.
Number B162, do you want parole? I can get it for you.
Right.
Well, sign here.
You would know more about this than I do, but they did it in Vietnam. They do it historically during wars. They'll empty out the prisons, say, or youth offenders, and say, you either go to the youth authority
right there,
or go to
the judge says, you know, to prevent you from leading a life of crime, you have a choice. You can either go into this prison or you can go into the army. It's your choice. Well, who takes
Right.
But in... we're making fun of it. One of the most effective and best trained, and in my view, one of the most admirable. Everybody's got to have an army, you know.
For right. Some,
the French Foreign Legion.
Oh, yeah.
I actually tried to join that once.
Did you? Would you get jilted by some girl or something?
No. I took a look at my future, as you can see what it is, and thought,
hey, I'm here with you. What's that say about me?
Well, anyway, so I went to the French consulate in New York and went up and talked to them and said, well, you got to get to Marseille and on your own steam and do it. Well, I thought about that for a while and didn't get the money up for the passage. But, I actually considered, because I really admire the French Foreign Legion, because they're a professional army.
Right.
So we can't, there's something wrong with what we're doing, but it's not necessarily in the nature of hired mercenary forces. And the French Foreign Legion is drawn primarily from people who are trying to drop out,
right,
get away, or get out of prison.
Right.
The famous line from the French Foreign Legion is, the recruiters, the guy signing you up when you're enlisting for the French Foreign Legion says, why are you trying to join the French Foreign Legion? Asks the recruiter. And he says, I want to forget. And so what is it you want to forget? And he says, I forgot. They're not talking. Something's got them there. You know?
Yeah, right. Well, my understanding has always been there's a lot of people who are trying to hide from indictments or criminal charges.
Debt collectors.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I guess the old French society, they used to have debtor prisons in France too. I guess if I'm
so. This
mistaken.
Is it. Put everything in Michael's name.
Michael's name. Okay.
Negotiate his enlistment,
right,
and have him say, I own all these things, there's all this debt, and if you'll forgive that stuff, I'll join. So, right?
Right, there you go.
We could work with this.
But it is interesting how the recruiters are now really, these guys are scavenging now. They're rigging test results for kids. They're phoning up GEDs. I mean, they're really, really grasping at straws now. And I don't know. I wonder if this foretells the return of the draft, actually.
It does.
Do you think so?
I've got a suggestion for them. Mm-hmm. We've seen on 60 Minutes and others the pictures of the two Marine recruiters walking around. And anyway, that's not the way to do it these days. For this particular war, what I'd do is put the Marines in civilian clothes,
right,
with a shill in the school, going, "Hey, I'm joining. Aren't you?"
Yeah,
rather than say,
right,
"Come on and join us." You know, it's got to be a wave of what to do. You know, like rap music.
Right.
You know? It sounds terrible, but it's really coming.
Yeah, there you go. That's a Tom. Maybe, are you sure you're not working for the Marines here, Tom? You know, that's a pretty good idea. Actually,
if I'd suggest anybody that go into the Navy, you can actually get a skill in there that you can use.
How about the Air Force? Air Force, I think they
then. I've never cared for the Air Force. I had an opportunity to join it, and it's wimps.
Okay. So, thanks, Tom, for that little tidbit. If there are Air Force people out here, I won't tell you where Tom is. Well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We broadcast from KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. My name is Dan Gowerthy, and my colleague is
Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us this morning, and we'd also like to invite you to take a look at our blog. It's on the internets at www.ltobs.blogspot.com, or you can just Google us at LTOBS and we come up at the top of your queue. So what we want to do now is just take a very short musical break, because we had an interview scheduled with a singer-songwriter from Ann Arbor, Michigan, Dawn Zianna Moon, and the phone patch is not working today. So we promised that we would play her music. Very talented person. I saw her blog on the internet, and we want to try to support independent musicians and aspiring musicians,
especially good-looking ones.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. That doesn't hurt either. But we can't interview her this morning, so we did promise we're going to play her music, and we're going to take a short break. And the name of her LP, or actually, it's not an LP anymore; it's a CD. Man, I'm really dating myself.
I have that problem, too, yeah.
Dating myself. An LP is something...
Well, you know, hey, when I say I've got to get to work, I'm still saying I got to hit that typewriter.
Yeah, right.
And I haven't used a typewriter in 20 years.
Well, it's just... Man, I'm really going off on tangents. You know, Jenny and I were talking about records or something like that.
Jenny being his wife.
My wife, Jenny. We were talking about records and whatnot a few weeks ago, and we were talking about LPs and 45s and 33s, and our kids were looking at us like... What are you talking about? You know, what is a 33? I said, well, you know, it's 33 and a third RPM. What's an RPM, you know? And I said, well, okay, you know, I guess that's a real generational thing. I was kind of at the tail end. I know what a 78 is. 78s were kind of went out of phase in the 50s, you know.
Let me add to this, is that, I don't know if you remember a Victrola.
Oh, yeah,
for 45s, that was all there was.
Yeah.
And so the... I was, whatever music I heard other than the radio was on my Victrola. And then we got this big stereo set. And our first stereo LPs,
right.
My father got Glenn Miller and Victory at Sea, of course. But the first LP I got was Henry Mancini's The Music from Peter Gunn. Really cool. But I was like, wow. LPs.
Well, you know, my parents they had a stereo like the one in the lobby here at KRBS. They bought it. That thing's got to be an antique because it was a Magnavox.
Looks very much like the one that we had.
Yeah, and my dad liked playing Trini Lopez live, and it was a pretty good album actually. Mm-hmm. But the other one that my dad really liked, and my mom just abhorred, because my mom was kind of a jazz and blues fan. My dad loved Sing Along with Mitch Miller. You know.
Yeah, right. You know, really, this is funny. Perry Parker.
Uh-huh.
No, that's a judge I know. Parker Worry was another... My father was a surveyor for the American Bureau of Shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And so Perry Parker. Parker Worry.
Peter Parker is Spider-Man, Tom.
Parker Worry was another one, and they're pals. And so he had just, they serve around the world, and Worries had just come back from Sweden, and they were much more sophisticated than we were.
Right.
And so they had all this music. But anyway, what they liked to watch on TV, the war, Victory at Sea.
So
these couple of guys, both serious veterans of World War II and the Merchant Marine, which was
That was dangerous.
This was like you get sunk a lot. Actually, there's a higher rate of casualties there than in the military.
Right.
But anyway, they sit around and listen to Victory at Sea and watch Victory at Sea on TV. That's where I got... You know, I always lived in a time warp. I grew up in Maine, which is 20 to 25 years behind the times. Anyway,
right.
Just because of its location and its facilities. And then, of course, I paid attention to the adults around me, but the adults were all these kind of... different walk to a different drummer,
right?
And I think that turned me into what I am.
Yeah, you know, I was giving Tom a ration when I came in, because during Democracy Now! In the first hour of broadcast this morning, Tom was calling the hip-hop music non-music, and I came in and I said, Tom, you are showing your age. You got to change with the times,
music,
Tom.
You can have rhythm, that's fine. And you can have melody, that's even better. But if you have rhythm, you don't have music until you have also a melody. I mean,
Well, they had the melody, started singing rap, man.
Rap has no melody.
Oh.
It's chanting.
Okay, chanting. We'll continue this discussion in a few minutes.
It's interesting, you know, and it's seductive, but it's... not music.
You know, we just killed about 5 minutes of time talking about Mitch Miller rap music and LPs.
We should find it. I'm sure there's a CD with Mitch Miller. He's just
I know. Be, so we'll he is actually, you know, who else was pretty cool from that era too? He's got a great voice. Is Burl Ives?
Oh yeah,
he got a great voice.
She wore a yellow ribbon. What the Mitch Miller and his gang. He had a television program.
Oh yeah, I know. It was the kind of like the folksy middle class, middle aged sort of music. You know, it was not quite the real folk music, but there was faux folk kind of, right? Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, yeah, that's fair enough.
Okay. Now let's get back to our musician.
Oh, our break's over. We gotta.
Right. The name of the CD is First Verse EP, and the artist is Dawn Zianna Moon, and she's from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I found her on the internet, and the music's quite nice. So we're gonna play a tune, and the name of the tune, I like the song. It's called "A Song for Dreamers." She manages to get the word catalyst, Gandhi, and Sister Teresa in the song.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She sounds intellectual.
Yeah, she is. You know, she went to the University of Michigan. What can I say, Tom? So here's Dawn Moon, and we'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street.
When all the songs have faded, when what's left on the canvas is hated, don't fall down. Pick yourself back up. When you see that the crowd just loved you, when the critics think you're a genius too, so good, good for rainy days. Run to catch the stars you saw tonight. At a lousy desk, when you can't handle another request, take a look outside. Stop staring at the screen. When you see that you're winning the race, can't wait to get that first place.
Well, that was the guest that we had scheduled, Dawn Zianna Moon.
She was good.
She was good. She's a singer-songwriter from Michigan. She put this, she put the CD out, and as I was saying earlier, I was just surfing the net, and I found it. She had a couple her songs you could download, like a 30-second snippet. And what I found really interesting, and I don't want to dwell into this too much, but it's interesting, she's using the internet to market herself, which is good, and there's like a contradiction, because you have the technology now where you can produce your own music and market it on the internet, which is good, and it really is good. But on the flip side of it is that to become a really well-known singer-songwriter, first of all, singer-songwriters I have great respect for because, as the name implies, they write their own music, they sing it, and they play their own instrument versus somebody like on American karaoke on TV that just goes there and sings music, and they might have a good voice.
As much like the guy who originally did it or the woman who originally did it as possible, so no creativity
right,
on their own part.
Exactly. So, but I came across her music on the internets, and the flip side of what I was saying is the technology is available. You can produce your own music and distribute it over the internet. But the counter to that is that these mega corporations that own the media, it's not like in the 60s, you could, put some money together, get a 45 burn and go down to your local radio station and hope to get some airtime on it because, that's how a lot of musicians started.
But, that's changing too.
Yeah.
Is that with iPod?
Oh yeah,
that's successful and has potential because the music industry is trying to cut it off right now.
Right. Anyhow, the name of the song that you listened to was a song for dreamers. So we'll play some more cuts from this CD as the show progresses. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, by the way, on broadcast from KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Dan Gowerthy, along with
Tom Nato.
And Tom, what do we have next on the agenda?
Well, this is a story that has not exactly been sweeping the nation, and I don't understand why not, because it's both funny and prophetic.
Right.
Did I mean to say pathetic?
Yeah, it is pathetic.
Anyway, I'm also drawing this from the Independent newspaper in England, which does a better job of writing these stories. We mention it. It's on our news, but they do it better, and they find the ironies involved and mention them in their stories.
Right.
But anyway, anti-gay mayor outed and accused of molesting boys.
Ooh, what city?
Spokane, Washington.
Oh, okay. That's a very conservative area, too. It is. Of Washington, it really is.
I've never been there.
Eastern Washington is a big agricultural area.
Am I saying it right? Spokane?
Yeah.
Spokane.
No, well, it depends. Some people say Spokane. The more common pronunciation I've heard is Spokane, as you've said it.
Okay.
But anyhow, go ahead.
A political storm has broken over Washington State after a newspaper alleged that the mayor of Spokane, well known for opposing gay rights, once molested young boys and has been using the perks of his office to lure men into having sex.
One quick question. Was he a priest by any chance?
I don't know. I think he was kicked out of Catholic school.
Yeah. Go on. I had to ask that question,
It makes sense.
Yes.
The spokesman review backed its story with excerpts from exchanges conducted on a gay-oriented website between the Republican mayor, James West. Didn't he have a television program, Wild Wild West?
Wait, Wild Wild West. I think you're thinking of Adam West from Batman.
No, Adam was the first name of the actor.
Yeah, I know.
No, Adam West was Batman.
Yeah, right. Did I say?
James West was Wild Wild West Conrad.
No, Bill Conrad.
No,
Robert Conrad.
Conrad.
Yeah.
Anyway, get back to James West and a person he believed was a 17-year-old boy. In fact, the teen was a computer specialist hired by the newspaper.
Guys, I love it. Oh, I love it.
Guys like you don't come along very often, the mayor, 54, wrote in one conversation on the gay.com website, identifying himself as right by guy,
like B-I guy. Okay.
I want it to last. Am I crazy here? He invited his chatting partner to his office in City Hall.
Oh, man, this guy is over the top.
Death wish. Offered him gifts and hinted that he might give him an internship.
Oh,
how internal that was, we don't know. Potentially more grave are the allegations that Mr. West molested two young men more than 25 years ago when he was a sheriff's deputy in the city. In the back seat there, guy. He denied those charges, but in doing so, more or less acknowledged his interest in sex with men. The alleged victims both have criminal records, and neither the police nor prosecutors have shown any interest in investigating the cases so far. The latest affair, so to speak, was described by one state legislator as an earthquake. Well, I can imagine it would be. Before becoming mayor of Spokane, the second largest city in the state, and this is the part that amazes me, Mr. West served in the state legislature, eventually becoming the party's most senior member of the state Senate. He apparently harbored greater ambitions. "Remember, I'm very closeted," he wrote in one of the online conversations. "No one knows I like guys." He added at another point, "Someday I may run for governor, and this would be bad, if you know what I mean." Well, now we do know what he means. The Seattle Times called for Mr. West's resignation in an editorial yesterday, arguing that he can go no longer serving as mayor of Spokane while dealing with the molestation claims. But so far, he has given no indication of any intention to step down.
Jeez. You know, you're right. It's funny. It's ironic on so many levels.
One last thing. Mr. West has opposed various gay rights measures in the past, threatening only last week to block an attempt by Spokane City Council to extend benefits to the same-sex partners of city employees. What a
hypocrite.
He once proposed barring gays and lesbians from working in Washington schools. West must face the hypocrisy of his stances on gay rights as a state legislator and mayor, the Seattle Times pontificated.
Oh man, it what amazes me about this story is, first of all,
I'm willing to bet that it's final ironies. I imagine that the editor who wrote the editorial at Seattle Times is also gay, but he doesn't want to mention it either.
Right. Well, the point of it is, though, is first of all, there's nothing wrong with, it doesn't matter. Your ability to govern has nothing to do really with your sexual orientation.
None
whatsoever,
Why would you want to lie?
I mean, I know.
And you can lie even, but online, put nothing in writing. I've told you, nothing in writing. It's just so silly. I mean, if you're going to have a lifestyle, it's your lifestyle, not the world's.
Right. But then why would you deny what you are, and then not only deny what you are, and a lot of people do that on several different issues in their life, but then something like this, not only deny it, but, have proposed laws that go against your own personal self-interest, what you really are. I never understood that, other than I think some of these politicians that are so deep in the closet that are conservative. And there, there's nothing wrong with anybody even being conservative and gay or what. It doesn't really matter. That's not the point. But why would he propose these laws that fly in the face of logic?
There's one question.
Power, I think.
There's this one question I have in this.
Mm-hmm.
That this mayor is 54 years old.
Right.
Well, he's not like dead yet. But
right. No.
This should be past his hyperactive sex life years. Right. So when you get to be of that age and still doing it. I mean, there was the guy we mentioned last, 84 years old.
Right.
But there's another thing besides sexual drive working here. Why they don't delve into that, I don't know. They're there, they can talk to him. But if I were the reporter on that, I'd be asking, well, what's the motives here?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand.
Why?
That. Well, this story brings up a whole kind of a subculture, I think, within the Republican Party. If memory serves you correct, remember the whole Jeff Gannon Guckert thing? You have a guy that was a prostitute. He's a homosexual prostitute, advertising himself on the internet, and then going to news conferences. Then there's a couple of senators a couple of congressmen who have been outed. One is David Dreyer, who's a congressman in Southern California, although the guy is not in the marriage of anything. He's a conservative. He hasn't necessarily proposed any anti-gay legislation. But there's another one who was outed last summer in Pennsylvania. And if memory serves me right, and I'd have to double check, the guy's name was Ed Stroud, I want to say that's the name that occurs to me.
You mean the Birdman of Alcatraz?
Oh, yeah. No. I think he was Robert Stroud.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I think this guy's name was Stroud. I want to say, I'd have to double check it. In any case, he was very, very conservative. He voiced opposition to gay marriage and all these other things. Well, lo and behold, that guy was outed last summer, and his was so bad he was going to run for Congress, and he dropped out of the race last summer. He was an incumbent, so that meant he would have been back in the House. And one other thing that's I find very interesting, there's been allegations, and I want to stress this: there are allegations and rumor and innuendo that Scott McClellan, Bush's White House press secretary, there's been allegations that, he's been known to frequent gay bars in Austin, Texas. And then when all this information came out about he frequented gay bars in Austin, Texas in the 90s, all of a sudden, within the drop of a hat, he was married, and I just found that kind of ironic, kind of like I think when Rock Hudson got married to his secretary or whatever it was.
5 o'clock be here, we'll get married.
Yeah, right.
Put on a press release.
But I really have trouble understanding that, why these guys like Jeff Gannon Guckert, the mayor of Spokane, the congressman from Pennsylvania, and there was also a lobbyist, a political strategist, I think his name was Finkelstein. I can't recall his exact name, but I'm pretty sure it's Finkelstein. He was a political consultant to the likes of Jesse Helms and whatnot, and this guy got married to his male partner about a month or two ago in Massachusetts. And there's nothing wrong with that, but then he devises these wedge issues. Gay marriage was one of them that they've used to divide people. So
I might want to get that.
Yeah, I'll go ahead, Tom.
Well, now I've got myself confused. I intended to say something, and if it gives me a second, I will remember it. Oh, that's right. The first of all, I don't know if you've ever worked in politics.
No.
But I have. And at a reasonable level, not for single campaigns, all the way up through state party campaigns.
Right.
And one thing I can tell you this is there's no such thing as a secret in politics.
Mm-hmm.
Although it may be a secret to the public, people's persuasions, even their parking tickets, are known at mm-hmm. some level
right.
in the office, or certainly by their opponents.
Right.
Right. And so when somebody like this is caught out,
mm-hmm.
People come down hard on them. But the question arises, who were the facilitators of this in the office who didn't rat him out?
Right.
Who didn't advise him, don't do that.
Right.
Boss, that's the wrong thing to do.
Right.
But I know about it. I guess in Washington State, it's some concern. There are people who are abetting him in this behavior. And so why don't they, if they're going to indict, say, one person, why not do that whole office? Because they're in it with them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're right. That's a good point. You're right. More than one person obviously had to know what was going on there. And he's soliciting a minor.
Let me give you an example.
For a sex act in the mayor's office.
Well, for instance, I worked in politics from low to high.
Mm-hmm.
One of the jobs, one of the most interesting and most powerful, was as a driver for a politician.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, as a mayor, has a driver. Driver took him where he was going and picked him up and brought him back, or went in and waited in the other room.
Right.
So where is the indictment? Where is the request that the driver quit, too?
Right.
Well, there's an abettor right there.
Right.
A facilitator, in fact.
Yeah, you're right. That's an interesting point. Never even thought about that. You're right. There's several people that probably knew of his shenanigans going on.
Right. And so did the other city council members. They knew.
But, kind of going off on a tangent again, but this is a subject that I know you're very familiar with. Are there, if you're working as, say, a secretary, civil servant, say, in the mayor's office, and you're not a political appointee, you're just a clerk, or whatever the position might be, and you see all this going on, are you willing to be a whistleblower and then get fired and get your name dragged through it, because you know how long litigation takes if you're a whistleblower. So it's like with the whistleblower laws, they've stacked the deck to protect themselves in a sense. You know what I mean?
Well, it really gets complicated here.
Yes.
Because, for instance, secretaries, and I guess you can make the argument drivers, whatever, mm-hmm. but secretaries certainly are confidential employees.
Right.
In other words, they have an obligation, because they know you know their secrets, that you are obliged to keep their secrets for them.
Right.
But
what if it's something, they're breaking the law?
Well, this is where the whistleblowers come in.
Right.
They're confidential employees who know they're supposed to keep it a secret, but the crime, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
becomes too blatant or too serious or harms enough people,
right.
not just a couple of rich men over in Chicago or,
right.
or Florida or a real estate agent who isn't closing a deal, but I mean
right.
the public, the guys you're supposed to be taking care of,
right.
then you have to ask, I'm a confidential employee, I've made a promise, should I keep it, or has this gone beyond that realm?
Right. But, you know, I think, I know from the experience and actually going back to our very first show, when we had Mary Alice on here, you blow the whistle, and all of a sudden, man, your life is turned upside down as a whistleblower, because then all of a sudden you become the point of attack. You know, you become the scourge. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is that a lot of times the laws are even set up, or the way that the politicians have things set up, is that they don't want whistleblowers, but the system is so rigged against whistleblowers that if it's against you, really your own personal, in some cases economic, well, a lot of cases economic self-interest, become a whistleblower, because you risk losing your job, being ostracized from the workplace, you know, the stress, the whole nine yards that come with it.
Look at when they do whistleblow.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, not all, but most, do a Richard Clark. They get their pension.
Right.
Then they rat them out.
Right.
Well, that is admirable because they told the truth.
Right.
Not very admirable because they could have done it.
They could have done it before.
Before it happened.
Right. Well, I think with Richard Clark, well, you know, we wouldn't want to go into that whole subject.
That's the function, is that they'll stay in, you know.
Right.
And they have an obvious self-interest, and not just for themselves, but for their families, for the kids in college. And so you can see the pressures of it.
Right.
And so it's a gray world out there.
It is. It is very gray. You know, and this mayor, this whole case is, you know, I guess getting back to the broader question that I have is, you know, we're really going on a lot of tangents, but I think one of the best politicians in the state of California is I can't think of her name off the top of
my head. Sheila Kuehl?
Thank you. Yes. And she's openly homosexual legislator from I think she's a senator now, from Southern California. When in Sacramento, I saw her speak a few times. Smart. I mean, she is smart as a whip. She's a USC graduate. And Sheila Kuehl, by the way, was in Dobie Gillis. She
sure.
was, what was her character's name? I can't remember.
I was trying to remember it the other day. She's the one with the wrinkly nose.
Yeah.
The Pomerantz?
Yeah, whatever. I can't remember what her name was. But
no, Mr. Pomerantz was the teacher.
Right.
Pomfret. Mr. Pomfret was the teacher. Maynard G. Krebs was the buddy, and I'll think of her name as soon as we're off the air.
Right. But anyhow, I think she's really a smart, really smart individual, and I had talked to her before at one of these meetings I went to. I said, why don't you run for governor? And this was back in, I think, 98. And she says, me? Run for governor? She says, are you kidding me? I mean, she said it very good-naturedly. She said, are you kidding me? She said, they run me out of this state. You know, they can't have an openly gay person be the governor, you know? And it's true.
In some ways, she serves a better purpose where she is.
Mm-hmm.
Barney Frank.
Mm-hmm. Right,
he's in the U.S. Congress
from Massachusetts,
and he's a self-admitted
openly gay, right?
And but because he admitted it,
right,
they can't touch him. It's
right,
no big secret, like the mayor here. So he can say what he thinks, and he can represent a lot of people who can't say what they think,
right,
for whatever their circumstances are.
Right,
and I think that those are the real leaders that we can really depend on.
This goes still back to the question: why are some of these Republicans that are so, is it the self-loathing? You know, I guess is that maybe the best way to describe it? They're so, you know, anti-gay, for instance. That they become a conservative on an anti-gay platform.
Well,
you know, that's the part that is so puzzling to me.
Well, you know, what there's actually a whole body of knowledge on this, or body of study.
Mm-hmm.
I used to read a lot about murder when I was doing all the court stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a syndrome among some people. There's a particular name for it that I can't recall right now, but it's the wish to be discovered.
Mm.
It's the there's a whole self-endangerment, playing close to the edge. People that really want to be discovered,
right?
They don't want it, but they want to be found out,
right?
And this happens often.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like in psychology 101, they talk about the criminal who wants to be caught.
Exactly.
Yeah, same sort of thing. Well, it could be, you know, but it just amazes me they go so deep into such, you know, whatever it might be, in this case, an anti-gay agenda, that they themselves are gay. It's, what is the old saying? He who protests the loudest, you know, that old Shakespearean.
You know, there's something interesting is that what this mayor did, mm-hmm. is a disservice to other gays.
Yes,
it
is.
I'll tell you why. Because now, because they don't admit, they're not forthright about it, those people who, those Christian right type people, because they're everywhere.
Yeah, right.
They won't tell you the truth, we'll tell you.
Right.
And so there you have it, is that if they would just say, look, you know, this is ordinary, and things are just this way, they could get beyond that. And I think that was largely the Stonewall movement's
right in New York in 1969, if I'm not mistaken.
Florida and New York,
yeah. Right. Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street with Dan Gowrity and
Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate your time very much. We are going to take a short musical break so we can change the CD, re-record the second hour, and as promised, we're going to continue to play some music from the CD titled First Verse EP by Dawn Ziana Moon, a singer.
I don't understand the title of the...
That's the name of the title. That's the title on there.
First verse extended play?
Yeah, that's what it is. That's the name.
This is her first... CD?
It's her first CD.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting because you look at it, and she did a pretty good job of putting together the cover art's good, but it's and it looks professional, but it's interesting because it's a small production company that did it, and she's using alternative means of distributing it versus going through the big record companies. So, and it's pretty good. I was reading her biography. She has a catalog of 70 songs already, and as you read on there, she says the reason she only did 4 was to keep the cost down for herself and for consumers, because studio time is very expensive. It's self-financed. So
what's this sell?
I can't say it on the air.
Oh,
we can't say it on the air on KRBS.
A lot or a little? Can you say
a little? It's very reasonable.
It's a deal.
It really is. It's very reasonable. You know, in fact, I should give you her internet's address. It's
find out for yourself.
DawnZianaMoon.com, and that's DawnXiana Moon, MOON.com. Anyhow, we're going to play the second cut of this called Keep Holding On, and we'll be back in a short break. You're listening to KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California.